following is a live LV Rocks original webcast. Visit LVRocks.com for studio cam and live chat room.
And that was the Centurion consoler in charge of production. Thank you very much, and welcome to another week. It's another theme song. And there he is. And this is Subject to Discussion live at LVRocks.com. And I'm Sean O'Mac, Sean Daly. You can call me anything you want. Just do not call me late for dinner. And if it's 7 o'clock in Las Vegas, it's time for Subject to Discussion. And once again, live at LV Rocks and also podcasted. Thank you very much, everybody podcasting the program, and also archived over on SpankWagon.net. SpankWagon's on every Friday from 7 till 9, followed by King Hesh. And also the program is part of the AntiRadio.net podcast, as well as Meeker Broadcasting's podcast network. And the program on Meeker has been moved to Saturday and Sunday afternoons now, a little more timelier time slot than after the church services on Sunday mornings. But anyway, and tonight, after the news and me and the news to you, will be Chip from PoliticalSports.com. So we look forward to talking to him. We haven't spoken to him in a few weeks. And then after him would be Rob Thurman of PopCultureJunkies.com. He's one of the bigwigs over there, so we'll talk to him. And then at the end of the program will be the birthday boy, Koenig Rules. He had a birthday the other day, so we'll have to get it out of him how old he is. And so we'll have him on. And what else? The email address, subject number two, discussion at lvrocks.com. And the website is subjecttodiscussion.com. And I'll get into the news a little bit from today. Of course, today we had the General Motors, interesting story out of from General Motors that they're going to cap gasoline prices in California and Florida, aiming to capitalize on consumer angst about the high cost of gasoline. General Motors Corporation on Tuesday said it would cap pump prices at $1.99 a gallon for customers in California and Florida who buy certain vehicles by July 5th. One hitch to the promotion is that the customers must also agree to a role in the OnStar Vehicle Diagnostic Service, which is free for the first year, but after that will cost $16.95 a month. The other hitch is that many of the eligible vehicles are serious gas guzzlers. Each month for 1 year, General Motors will give drivers a credit on a prepaid card based on their estimated fuel usage. Fuel usage will be calculated by the miles they drive, as recorded by OnStar, and the vehicle's fuel economy rating. General Motors will credit the drivers the difference between the average price per gallon in their state and the $1.99 cap. Now, that sounds interesting. And the credits can be used through December of 2007. Consumers wouldn't get any credits if the gas prices fall below $1.99. Bad chance of that happening unless we strike oil in, out in the desert here in Nevada. General Motors said a California resident who buys a 2007 Chevrolet Tahoe and drives 1,000 miles a month would get an estimated $103.75 monthly credit based on the current average premium fuel price of $3.65 a gallon, General Motors said. So a Florida resident who drives a 2006 Buick LaCrosse about 1,000 miles a month would get an estimated monthly credit of $60 based on the current premium fuel price of $3.19. So I thought that was interesting. It's good to see, especially General Motors. You know, they're all these the domestic automakers are kind of struggling, so at least they're trying to do something to help with the gas price. We have to buy one of their cars and sign up for OnStar. And then yesterday we had the personal data on millions of U.S. veterans was stolen. It broke over the weekend. Personal information on 26.5 million. Now, this turns out this has been known for several weeks now about this, and it's just starting to get out in the news yesterday and over the weekend. Personal information on 26.5 million U.S. veterans was stolen from an employee of the Department of Veterans Affairs who took the data home without authorization. So, I don't know. That seems funny how, of course, the one day he takes the information home was also the day his house gets broken into and that computer gets stolen. I don't know. It seems a little, you know, you smell a little rotten fish there, so I don't know. And it's a little bit from pop culture. A Bad Omen, a New York screening of the movie Omen, The Omen, sparked some controversy last week when audience members objected to an image of 9/11 used in the film. Why did director John Moore decide to show the burning World Trade Center towers in the opening? The impression that I had when it happened was that we were in a very dark time. It seemed to me to be the beginning of a very dark series of events. That's why he put it in the movie, he told the crowd. So it's interesting. We got several of these. You got the United 93, and you got the World Trade Center movie that Oliver Stone made, and now this. So we'll see how the American public takes to these movies and portrayal of the 9/11 on the screen. And on Sunday, we had one in 136 United States residents are behind bars in U.S. prisons. Jails grew by 1,000 inmates a week from 04 to 05. This is from Washington. Prisons and jails added more than 1,000 inmates each week for a year, putting almost 2.2 million people, or one in every 36 U.S. residents, behind bars by last summer. The total on June 30th, 2005, was 56,000 more than at the same time in 2004. Wow. And also then we had TV bounty hunter Dwayne Dog Chapman weds. Dwayne Dog Chapman, star of A&E's blah, 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 the reality show, has married his longtime sidekick, Beth Smith. The sunset ceremony took place Saturday, a day after the death of Chapman's daughter, Barbara, was killed in a car accident near her home in Fairbanks, Alaska. And Chapman gathered with his 10 surviving children and discussed, I think two of them were from this Beth Smith, and discussed whether to proceed with the ceremony, and they all agreed to unanimously to go on with the ceremony. That's crazy. That was my daughter. No way in hell I'd go on with that wedding until I put her to rest and got over it. And then also on Sunday, we had on Meet the Press, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. He's that mealy-mouthed guy that was involved with the impeachment. He talked about the amnesty in regards to illegal immigrants, and he said in response to that, about amnesty, he goes, no amnesty. He goes, no, amnesty to me is what Jimmy Carter did with draft dodgers. Yeah, he said, Carter said, come on back, all is forgiven. He forgets that in 86, Ronald Reagan, the GOP Jesus Christ, he also gave amnesty to the troops, to the illegal immigrants that were here in 86. Reagan is the one that gave them amnesty. He's the God, I said, the Jesus Christ of the Republican Party. He gave them. So where's the trashing of Reagan? Oh, no, Reagan can't be touched, but it's Carter, you can have Adam. And also Saturday, 19 killed in Baghdad bomb explosion. A bomb exploded Saturday in a Shiite district of Baghdad, killing 19 people and wounding 58 on the day that Iraq's incoming prime minister was to present his cabinet. I think they're hiding in the cabinet now. Present his cabinet to Parliament for approval. And also, Jack Osborne is going to write his autobiography. This kid's 20 years old. He's already going to write his book. Amazing. Of course, it'll probably be a bestseller and a movie. And Friday, we had Chris Tucker. This came out. He's going to be paid $25 million for Rush Hour 3. I think the movie deserved a third and their sequel, but oh well. And in a CNN poll, since the immigration speech by King George, approval was 36%, disapproved 57%. Bush's handling of terrorism, 47%. Iraq, 34%. Economy, 34%. Gas prices, 16%. Immigration, 36%, up from 25% in January. So his little speech helped. I said, I kind of go along with Bush's idea, have a middle-of-the-road type of approach to this. You're not going to solve it, go into one extreme to the other. You can't really have a middle-of-the-road type of thing. So I relatively agree with Bush on that one area of the common middle ground immigration bill. And then Thursday, we had Washington Post approval of Iraq war. Approval is 40%. A mistake going to Iraq was 59%. And 69% says the country is on the wrong track. Democrats are now focused, are now favored to handle all 10 issues measured in the poll. They're now favored to handle all 10 issues. The Washington Post has issues that they poll people on periodically. And now the Democrats are favored in their ability to handle those 10 issues in all of them now over the Republicans. Their survey shows 56% saying they would prefer to see Democrats in control of the Congress after the elections. And also, this affects us locally here in Las Vegas. Elvis's legacy joining Cirque du Soleil. CKX Incorporated, a parent company of Elvis Presley Enterprises, announced a long-term joint venture Thursday with Cirque du Soleil, Canadian acrobat troupe, blah, blah, blah. And then so probably they're going to have some kind of show and with Elvis as the centerpiece of it. And they're going to produce a series of shows focused on Elvis's life and music. So I have a feeling we're going to get one of those Cirque du Soleil's Elvis shows here in Vegas, like we need another one. Then Wednesday we had House passes a $2.8 trillion budget plan. The House passed a $2.8 trillion budget blueprint early Thursday. after GOP moderates won a promise for modest increases in spending on education, health, and other social programs. And then we had American Idol. I guess tonight's the season finale of American Idol. Tears streamed from American Idol judge Paula Abdul's eyes when the result was announced. The audience stood and clapped, paying their respects. In a close vote, Abdul's favorite finalist, Elliot Yaman, an Idol underdog and blue-eyed soul singer, was bounced off the Fox Talent Contest during Wednesday's elimination show. And that will move on to news to you. And this is from today. There's a little Bucks in the chat room. Somehow he's had problems with what? I don't know. And John is in the chat room. And this is from the today. The U.S. public widely distrusts its leaders. No kidding. I have that idiot from Louisiana, that William Jefferson, got busted with $100,000 in his cooler, in his freezer, wrapped in tinfoil. So, and now they're all fighting that the GOP and the Democrats in Congress are rallying together, saying that the Justice Department crossed the separation of powers line by raiding his congressional office on Capitol Hill. So there's a little tension there. So we'll see where that goes. But U.S. public widely distrusts its leaders. A Lichtman-Zogby interactive poll: government and corporate scandals damage public trust in institutions at the bedrock of society. 3 out of 4, 75%, say they trust government less than they did 5 years ago. Just 5% say they think corporations do right by the consumers they are in business to serve. Wow. And only 25% feel the reporting is fair and accurate in the newspapers they read or on the nightly newscast they watch. Nearly 60% say they believe that the state of honesty in America today is in poor shape. 18% says it is in the worst possible shape. So that's interesting, very interesting. So American people just don't know what the hell's going on in this country anymore. You got the politicians getting, you know, dragged out into these scandals, and you got all this, you know, BS going on with these companies, the gas prices. So it's a mess. None immune. This is also from today. None are immune from Iraq, Baghdad strife. This is a quote from a reporter. I wonder what it's like to have to bargain over the telephone for the life of your husband, your wife, or your child. BBC on Tuesday. It's hard to imagine the anguish waiting for the phone to ring, waiting for the anonymous voice to name an impossible ransom, and waiting again to see if a lower price for the life of your loved one is acceptable. This is about the family of man runs a big shop in the area where they live around there in Baghdad. I may soon be finding out if they are lucky. A few days ago, a convoy of 4x4 vehicles pulled up outside the shop. Armed men got out and went in. They seized him and drove away. And nobody knows if they were from a party militia or off-duty policemen or just well-organized gangsters. So this is kind of a random thing going on in Iraq now. Where is this peace and prosperity supposed to be bringing to this country? All this random kidnappings and ransom and hostages. It's ridiculous. The family will now be praying that the phone does ring. And the cousin, this reporter again is going on, the cousin of a good friend of mine, let's call him Adnan, was among the lucky ones. His wife and child were kidnapped, and the phone did eventually ring. The demand was for $1 million. Adnan does not have that kind of money, but he did manage to raise $100,000, and they eventually settled for that, and he got his family back.
So, holy cow!
So this is the kind of BS that's going on over there, you know? And look at U.S. military deaths. As of Tuesday, today, at least 2,456 members of the U.S. military have died since the beginning of the Iraqi war in March 2003, according to the Associated Press. And also, the other countries have lost military troops as well. British has lost 111 troops, Italy 31, Bulgaria 13, Spain and 11. Since the start of U.S. military operations in Iraq, 18,088 U.S. service members have been wounded, according to the Defense Department tally. So that makes, what is it, 20,000 people have been killed or wounded in Iraq since this started. 20,000. That's amazing. This is about the William Jefferson bust on Capitol Hill. FBI says Jefferson was filmed taking cash. Affidavit details a sting on lawmakers. Representative William J. Jefferson, Democrat of Louisiana, the target of a 14-month public corruption probe, was videotaped accepting $100,000 in $100 bills.
Democrats, piss me off.
I know, this one does. From a Northern Virginia investor who was wearing an FBI wire. A few days later, on August 3rd, 2005, FBI agents raided Jefferson's home in Northeast Washington and found $90,000 of the cash in the freezer. So how come this is almost a year later? How come all this is just coming out now? It's amazing. It's probably in the because it's in the affidavit, but I mean, the 83-page affidavit used to raid Jefferson's Capitol Hill office on Saturday night portrays him as a money-hungry man who freely solicited hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes, discussed payoffs to African officials, and had a history of involvement in numerous bribery schemes, and used his family to hide his interest in high-tech business ventures he promoted in Cameroon, Ghana, and Nigeria. So, wow. And, of course, I saw that where he's refusing to step down. So, I don't know. They have all this documentation. They got to lean on him to get the hell out of there because things are going pretty good for the Democrats until this came up. So, you got to get him out of there quick. A restless base throws the GOP off balance, dismay, and hints at rebellion in the party's conservative core. They don't bode well for November. This is from the LA Times on Monday. Republican leaders worried that the party's conservative base is demoralized. Lean hard on one ray of hope these days, that the election day is almost 6 months away, leaving lots of time to get voters to mobilize, blah, blah. In the Rocky Mountains, a registered Republican was so dissatisfied they wrote a $26,000 check to the Democrats' Senate campaign committee. Wow. In Pennsylvania's primary last week, conservative Republicans unseated more than a dozen state legislators. John Eichelberger is a conservative who defeated the state's GOP the state Senate's GOP president, says it's time for Republicans to start acting like Republicans. Haven't they been acting like the Republicans all along with all this graft and corruption and debt dealing and all this secretive spying and wiretapping? Yeah, it reeks of Nixon, you know. Let's see here. Some Republicans are so discouraged by the direction of the country and the record of their party, including the growth of federal spending, turmoil in Iraq, and Bush's immigration policy, that they have begun wondering if the Republicans might be better off losing control of Congress. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely they're a lot better off. 2 years in the there you go. 2 years in the political wilderness would do us a lot of good. This is a quote from one Republican member of Congress who asked not to be named because of threats of being tarred and feathered. No kidding. So, absolutely. Throw him in the wilderness for a while. I'll wake him up. And this is also from, this is from Monday. U.S. military no longer planning for victory in Iraq. Washington's new watchword, containment. An old word is gaining new currency in Washington, containment. Maybe hearing a lot more of it as the Bush administration hunkers down for its final 2 years. Containment of Iraq's low-level civil war. Oh, here we go. Civil war. What Newsweek said it. Civil war. Containment of Iraq's low-level civil war, which shows every sign of persisting for years despite the new government inaugurated this week. They're in hiding now. They're in their cabinet hiding. Containment of Iran's nuclear power, which may lead to a missile defense system in Europe. Containment of the Islamism revived by Hamas and Hezbollah by the Sunni suicide bombers in Iraq, as well as the Shiite Crescent, as Jordan's King Abdullah once called it, running from Iran through southern Iraq and into the Gulf. So, big mess over there. Big. And now they're just going to hold it together for the last 2 years, and then he's going to bail out and leave whoever takes over, take care of the mess. So that's what they're going to do. You know, let's hold together. And once John Edwards or something raises his hand, takes the oath, then all hell will break loose again over there because they're just containing it for the last 2 years. Elections, this is from Sunday. Elections are a crux of GOP strategy. Bush aides look to midterm vote as a way to reverse slide. You better get off that slide because he's sliding even further and further down. Confronting the worst poll numbers seen in the West Wing since his father went down to defeat. President Bush and his team are focusing on the fall midterm elections as the best chance to salvage his presidency and are building a campaign strategy around tax cuts, immigration, and national security. Modern history offers no precedent of a president climbing from a hole as deep as the one Bush finds himself in. And I think Bush is down there with Jimmy Hoffa. And White House strategists have concluded that no staff shakeup or other quick fix will alter their trajectory. In the sixth year of his tenure, they said, Bush cannot easily change the minds of voters whose impressions are fully formed. Only thing outside of an event from the outside, from beyond their control, such as the capture of Osama bin Laden. Hello, he's tape of the month. He came out on their tape today, as a matter of fact. You know, I don't understand this. How can we not find this man, you know? With all of our technology And we can't find a 6'7" guy walking around with a kidney dialysis machine sending tapes to Al Jazeera. You know, why can't we just put a tail on that damn studio and track people coming out of that damn studio with the tapes? I don't know. So anyway, the midterm elections are the last hope for the GOP to hold off the Democrats. He says if Republicans retain Congress in November, Bush advisors note, he could assert that for the third straight election, the party defied historic patterns and popular predictions. Bush, they said, could advance a fresh agenda in early 2007, but they acknowledged that a House takeover by Nancy Pelosi would foreshadow a contentious final 2 years, fending off congressional subpoenas, absolutely, and hostile legislation. So, yeah, we need subpoenas. Should be a blizzard of subpoenas on that White House when she takes over. A blizzard. Top McCain aide insults entire college graduating class. I saw this last night on Countdown. This is from this clown, an aide of McCain's. He says, very unlikely any of you will ever possess one small fraction of the character of John McCain. This is the same John McCain who was involved with the Keating 5 bank scandal several years ago. Remember that? Mark Salter, a longtime aide and chief of staff to Senator John McCain, posted a response to Jean Rohe's blog entry at the Huffington Post, writing that her commencement address at the new school's blah, 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 succeeded in making herself look like an idiot. Oh, that's nice to the new students coming out into the world. That's a nice view they get of the purported front runner for the 2008 GOP presidential primary. He goes on this guy, Mark Salter, a longtime aide to GOP Senator John McCain, goes on to say to her and her graduating class that it's unlikely any of you will ever possess one small blah, blah, blah. Yeah, this clown. You know, I don't know what McCain thought going there anyway. I think he was going to roll over him because he's the vaulted Senator John McCain from Arizona. I mean, give me a break. You know, and this is the same speech he gave 2 weeks ago at Liberty University. It's the same damn speech. You know, and basically it's not even a speech to school, to the students, they said, not encouraging them for their future. It's a campaign stump speech. So, I don't know. I said, yeah, I don't think he's going to make it. I hope he doesn't make it. I'd like to see somebody come up there and just send him down to defeat again. That'll show him, you know. Failed amnesty legislation of 1986 haunts the current immigration bills in Congress. This is from Monday. Day in and day out, as the immigration debate boils, the halls of Congress, of the GOP Congress, are haunted by the specter of Senate Bill 1200, the failed amnesty legislation of 1986 under GOP Jesus Christ President Ronald Reagan. President Ronald Reagan signed that bill into law with great fanfare amid promises that would grant legal status to illegal immigrants, crack down on employers. Oh, this sounds vaguely familiar what's going on right now. Crack down on employers who hired...
Could we get rid of all the Mexicans?
Reagan didn't do it either. Crack down on employers who hired illegal workers and secure the border once and for all. Are we back in time, or is this 2006 or 1986? Instead, fraudulent applications tainted the process. Many employers continued their illicit hiring practices, blah, blah, blah. Today, senators who hope to put the nation's illegal immigrants on a path to citizenship say they have learned from the past. Ah, ha, ha. Well, that's the thing I said with that mealy-mouthed Lindsey Graham. Well, Reagan signed a bill giving him amnesty back in 86. So he conveniently forgot about that. So... And this just shows all these Republicans are just full of it, you know, full of it. And the key Democratic race for 2008 is Bayh versus Warner versus Edwards. This is from the Rothenberg Political Report on Saturday. The race for the GOP Democratic presidential nomination won't begin officially until after November's midterm elections. But already there are signs that a race within the race is developing to become the alternative to Hillary Clinton. Three contenders, all born and identified with red states, are John Edwards. Of course, he ran with Kerry last time. Pseudo-Southerner Mark Warner and Hoosier Senator Evan Bayh. I don't think either one of them. I think John Edwards is going to be the official anti-Hillary candidate. That's who I think. That's if his wife is healthy, because his wife is going through... she's gone through some dialysis and not dialysis, some, excuse me, gone through some chemo and everything for breast cancer. So hopefully she'll be all right. And this is from a Richard Vigiri. Bush's base betrayal is from Sunday from the Washington Post, an op-ed. 65 months into Bush's presidency, conservatives feel betrayed. After the Bridge to Nowhere, the transportation bill, the Harriet Myers Supreme Court nomination, and the Dubai Ports World deal, the immigration crisis was a tipping point for us. Indeed, a Washington Post ABC News poll found last week that Republican disapproval of Bush's presidency has increased from 16% to 30% in 1 month. Yeah, that's good news. Ah, I hope they just fracture all apart. Yeah, this immigration bill is going to do it. Just break them all apart. Vigiri, a longtime master of direct mail fundraising who played a central role in the conservative rise to power over the last 30 years, was quoted the day after the 2004 election as saying, "Now comes the revolution. If you don't implement a conservative agenda now, when do you?" 18 months later, Vigiri feels betrayed. Yeah, the main cause of conservatives' anger with Bush is he walked the walk, but didn't talk the walk, whatever the hell that phrase is. So the White House and congressional Republicans seem to have adopted a one-word strategy, bribery. Wow, this is from a Republican. Buy off seniors with a prescription drug benefit. Buy off the steel industry with tariffs. Buy off agribusiness with subsidies. The cost of illegal bribery pales next to that of legal bribery, such as congressional earmarks. So he's calling for conservatives to stay home by the millions in next November's election, or at the very least, create a new movement outside the Republican Party, blah, blah, blah. So he's never seen conservatives so downright fed up as they are today. Wow, that's always good news. Good to see them all fed up with Bush. This is also from Sunday. Hastert lets Cheney have it. This is from Robert Novak, a GOP conservative columnist. House Speaker Dennis Hastert engaged in a high-decibel rant last week when he met with Vice President Shooter Cheney. The speaker was enraged by the sacking of his friend and former colleague Porter Goss. Hastert was so upset that a private session with Bush in the living quarters of the White House was scheduled immediately. That wrath reflects the feeling in the House Republican cloakroom that Goss, who gave up a safe congrats, blah, 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 is being made
you
a scapegoat.
Son of a
so
bitch.
That's good. Let them have it. Let them blow each other apart, I say.
You know?
Wow.
It
was
loud.
Who is that? Is that Vince McMahon? Sound like Vince McMahon. They were here yesterday, as a matter of fact. They did Raw here. WWE Raw.
You sick son of a bitch. You just
met
your question faster than I died.
Wow. Whatever. Congress faces multiple criminal probes. For the first time since the app scam scandal a quarter century ago, multiple lawmakers face criminal and ethics investigations that are tarnishing Congress. Tarnishing? Hello. They've been tarnishing for years. What are you talking about? Already low on public approval. Three separate bribery investigations by the Justice Department were bad enough news for lawmakers. But the woes increased last week when the House Ethics Committee broke a 16-month partisan gridlock and announced an investigation into the same matters. So now the Ethics Committee in the House is starting to get in the gear now and investigate these people. So we have an entire generation who imagines they're a member of Congress in an orange jumpsuit. That's sad. It is sad, because I have to say, much like younger people going out and vote, this really imagery of their congressmen getting arrested and, you know, offices getting raided and Duke Cunningham crying his eyes out that he got caught, you know, all this, you know, it's sad. And I say we got to clean these, at least this time around, we got to clean the GOP out of Congress, get the Democrats one house in Congress, you know, and that way they can go back to this check and balance. We got to have this check and balance, you know. It's just all the sense of where there's no third party. Oh, third party. People do not realize what kind of a effort a third party is, you know, the money it takes, the time, you know. I used to be involved with the Reform Party, the ballot access. It wasn't for Perot's millions of dollars. The Reform Party never gotten a ballot in the states they were on. They had to file lawsuits and everything else. It's not easy, and you can't do it within a year or two. It takes years to do this. You can't have a third party up and running in 2 years. It's not going to happen. So the only way we can do this, you know, I say I'm a Democrat, but I do want to see a third party come up and be a check on those other two, you know, get the other two in line. But until then, we have to have a split government. Let the Democrats have the House, you know, and they could, you know, bring Bush down to his knees. You know, fire these subpoenas at the White House, and they'll bring him down. You know, and then the same thing. They'll investigate each other to keep each other in check. That's the way it'll have to be, you know, until we get a third party, you know. Common sense. Obama assails Bush. Democratic Senator Barack Obama from Illinois on Thursday ridiculed the Bush administration's defense of the Iraq war, arguing that messages such as plan for victory can hide the 2,400 flag-draped coffins that have arrived at the Dover Air Force Base. Yeah, that's imagery there, yes. a speech to Emily's List, the Illinois Center, used biting criticism in assailing the president and his handling of the war. This idea that somehow if you say the words plan for victory and stay the course over and over and over again, and you put these subliminal messages behind you that say victory, victory, and victory, that somehow people are not going to notice the 2,400 flag-draped coffins that have arrived in Dover. That's true. That's true. You know, you say, oh, now what a Bush aide, with the cabinet being announced, making incremental steps. What is he talking about? These stories about these people getting dragged out of their houses and held for hostage. I mean, as that's a step forward, I hate to see what their life was like before. You know, the snooping goes beyond phone calls. This is from Sunday from Business Week magazine. Also, they have information that the government is actually buying lists commercially, so avoids the Privacy Act. Where are we here? Grabbing data wholesale from the private sector is the way agencies are getting around the requirements of the Privacy Act. So now, the Departments of Justice, State, and Homeland Security spend millions of our money annually to buy commercial databases that track Americans' finances, phone numbers, and biographical information, according to a report last month by the U.S. Government Accounting Office. So it's amazing, you know, that they can't do this, that they are doing this to us, you know. So I think with that, we'll bring on Chip from PoliticalSports.com. Here he comes. And Chip from Political Sports, are you with us, sir?
Sean, how are you doing?
I'm fine, sir. How are you? Thank you for joining us.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you for joining us for this subject discussion live event.
Yeah, boy, I tell you, politics
special.
Is never boring.
No, this is a special
especially
edition.
These days.
Yes. So
it's half watching the Titanic sink, and the other half is just like disbelief that they're watching the Democrats try to get their act together to counteract what Bush has been up to.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, the Democrats got to get their acts together. I mean, it's just that, I don't know. I mean, it looks good right now, but I don't know. I wouldn't put anything past the Rove or Bush. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if for the election the threat level gets raised, you know, for the hell of it.
Well, why not just, you know, send a B-52 or something into Iran, or into North Korea. That would change everything overnight.
I don't know. I don't think he'd do that. I think he's in enough hot water over Iraq. I don't think he'd risk this Iran business. Do you?
Really? I don't think so.
No. They would.
He's gone so far as to, you know, tap phone calls of reporters, and tap tens of millions of Americans. You know, he's so-called tapping. You know, this whole phone tapping thing is really funny. But he's tapping all these Americans. You know, and you read in the papers and you realize he's only tapping landlines. No cell phones. So what does that tell you? Like anybody under the age of 60 is calling on cell phones, which, you know, if you're trying to track Al-Qaeda, who's going to be on a landline?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just almost, it's so comical. You can't make, this is like the Keystone Cops or, you know, Abbott and Costello. Unbelievable.
It's amazing all this tapping is going on. Hell, I remember, you know, the only thing, when Clinton was in, the only thing he tapped was Monica Lewinsky. You know what I mean?
That's right.
But I mean, absolutely. And then they had this thing about, you heard that last story I mentioned about Business Week, about the Justice Department, State, and Homeland Security actually buying commercial databases from outside companies now.
Yes.
Yeah, using our money to buy databases. You know, I mean, that's how they're getting around the Privacy Act. They're buying it from these outside commercial companies. That's ridiculous.
I know it is. It's really very, very weird.
Yeah. But now, what's
the whole thing? It just gets, it seems keep going. You think that each week whenever we get together, once every week or every other week or every 3 weeks or whatever it is, but you think it can't go any further. I mean, sometime they're going to have to realize that they're goofing up or they're really screwing this up and they're going to have to change direction. Yeah. But they don't change direction. They continue doing the exact same thing that they've been doing, which has led them down to, depending on which poll, 33%, 29%, 32% approval ratings. They just don't seem to care.
No. You know why they don't care? Because they have no fear of any kind of subpoenas. That's why I hope when the Democrats get in, it's going to be a blizzard of subpoenas onto the White House, you know?
Well, that's certainly what the Republicans fear.
Yeah.
Because if they get a hold of one of the two houses of Congress, they're going to start investigations and open up like a can of worms and all this stuff, which has been, you know, held up by Senator Roberts or, you know, various Republicans in the House and in the Senate that have really tried to stop any meaningful investigations into anything from 9/11 forward.
Well, that's going to come to a bitter end after November. Now, I see him on your blog right now, which is politicalsports.com. Your player of the week is Gene Rohe, huh? From the what the hell school is this? The new university? Was it the new school?
She was graduating from the new school in New York City, and many of your listeners probably don't know of her or maybe just missed in the news cycle what occurred, and maybe they don't know of the new school, but it's a relatively liberal school in New York, and John McCain was asked to speak one of three commencement speeches this particular spring, one being at Liberty University, home of Jerry Falwell, the other at Columbia University, and the third being at the New School. And Jean Roe was graduating, and she, through the impetus of a friend of hers, sort of said, well, you know, maybe I should really do something beyond the standard thing. You know, John McCain is coming up here. He's giving the same speech he gave to the other two schools. It has nothing to do with commencement and the graduating class and looking to the future and hopes and dreams and all that. It's more like a presidential stump speech.
Yeah.
And she decided, well, if he's not going to talk about commencement, either am I. And at about 2 o'clock in the morning, she sat down and completely rewrote her graduation speech. I guess she was, you know, valedictorian or something like that, and essentially, you know, attacked John McCain. And for somebody who's 21 years old to get up in New York City, where it's gotten tremendous amount of press from not only the New York Times and the Post and the Daily News, but you know, Fox News was covering it, and you know, many people on the right condemned what she had to say. But she basically said, "Look, you're up here giving a stump speech.
Yeah.
What you're saying has nothing to do with graduation. You know, it's reprehensible that you supported this war. That there are no where are the weapons of mass destruction? Where's Osama bin Laden? You know, you haven't supported what the initial intent of this war was."
Exactly.
And, you know, she really confronted him. And, you know, he came back through not only what he said after the fact, but also what his underlings said,
that
he was some naive, young, liberal, radical New York kid who didn't know what the hell she was talking about.
Yeah, he was some kind of slimeball aide of his, what was his name, a Salter or something like that?
Yes. And she came back and she, you know, spoke about this, and she, you know, you can find a video of what she said on crooksandliars.com. But she basically said, look, I didn't condemn him. You know, I didn't attack him. I just said that this was inappropriate considering the time and that it was important to bring up these issues. And you have to really give her credit, being the age that she is, to stand up for her beliefs and confront somebody who is such a man of power in this country. And it was, you know, whether you agree or disagree, I mean, I think that she was very thoughtful in her presentation and what she had to say.
Well, absolutely. I'm all for her. Let her slap McCain down a little bit. I mean, he, you know, on his high horse and all this stuff. And I'm still the maverick. BS. I mean, he's moving over to Bush to get all his help to get the nomination. And who is he kidding, you know? And then, you know, I got the quote from his aide. He says, very unlikely any of you will ever possess one small fraction of the character of John McCain. Is that the small fraction that was caught up in the Keating 5 banking scandal years ago? I wonder.
Huh? Yes. absolutely.
They put him up on some kind of a holier-than-thou pedestal, and he's not. I mean, everybody says he's got this nasty temper that can go off, and you touch him, he might go off and then, you know, blow his temper. You know, yep. And some of those sound bites you heard during the campaign, you didn't think the cameras was on or recording, and some of the sound bites, you know, blowing off steam, you know, it's amazing, you know?
Yeah, it absolutely is.
So she's your player of the week. And then your fumble of the week was Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the House. What did he
do? Dennis Hastert. Well, he was my fabulous fumble of the week a couple of weeks ago for, driving out of the Congress in some hydrogen-powered car, and he got up like a block or two away and then switched to a big SUV. You know, and then here he goes and makes a speech and says, "Well, folks, if you earn $40,000 a year and have a family of two children, you don't pay any taxes. Mm. So you probably, if you don't pay any taxes, you are not going to get a very big tax cut." Yeah, is he kidding?
Yeah.
You know, here's a guy he's the Speaker of the House, and he's so out of touch with Middle America. Yeah, that he thinks that somebody making $40,000 a year isn't paying any taxes.
I don't know. Well, look at the picture. He better spend. Maybe he's spending $40,000 a year at Denny's or something. You know what I'm saying?
No, man.
You know? But unbelievable.
He's one big boy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, big mouth. Yeah, I hope
he's had more than a couple Big Macs or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I think he took over for Clinton. They're going to the McDonald's there by the Capitol. But, I mean, it'd be good once Pelosi takes over. See him having to hand over the gavel to her. That'd be quite a humbling experience for him, I hope. You know?
Yes, I think so.
You want to talk about Joe Lieberman and Ned Lamont in Connecticut. That's turned into a battle, huh?
It really has, and it's been very interesting. I live in Connecticut, and I've been involved in politics here for quite some time, and I can say that, you know, people that are involved outside of the major cities who are Democrats are very, very much against Joe Lieberman for all the obvious reasons. Mm. You know, his waffling, his straddling, his supporting Bush, all these things, and let Ned Lamont decided he was going to run, and he ran after another guy named John Orman decided not to run. And John Orman was a professor at a university in Connecticut and has been very involved in progressive politics, but he got so much pressure from people saying that they weren't going to support him and he was going to get no money that he decided to drop out. Well, Ned Lamont is worth like $100 million.
Really?
He said, screw it, I'm running.
Wow.
And he, you know, he got a lot of support outside of the major cities and outside of the areas where there are major defense industries. Mm-hmm. And in Connecticut, with Groton, Connecticut, which is Electric Boat, makes all of these nuclear submarines, and Sikorsky Aircraft makes all the helicopters, United Technologies, Pratt & Whitney makes a lot of jet engines. You know, and Joe Lieberman has been very careful in that he's been a big supporter of defense. Mm. So he appeals to those sort of moderate Democrats. But all the other people have really jumped on the bandwagon of Lamont. And it was very interesting. I went to a big fundraiser about a month and a half ago in our town. And at that time, there were a number of major politicians in the state. You know, the Secretary of State, the Comptroller, the Attorney General, all of these people showed up that are Democrats, and I was talking to almost all of them, and they said that they were worried about not supporting Lieberman because they wanted him on the ticket. And the reason being is that we currently have a Republican governor who has been very, very popular after John Rowland, who had been the previous governor, resigned in disgrace. And they were afraid that without Lieberman, they wouldn't be able to pull enough moderates or independents into the Democratic ticket to vote for the Secretary of State, the Comptroller, the Treasurer, the Attorney General, to get those Democrats elected. Hmm. They didn't necessarily like his policies, but they were looking at it from their own, you know, political health. You know, they wanted to be elected. And the only reason that he's going to get support from those types of people, and then, you know, Lieberman is going to run in the primary now, and there's going to be a primary, and he's going to try and gain as much support as possible from these independents or moderate Democrats who might support him.
Huh.
But it's going to be a very, very interesting primary battle, which will occur in August.
It sounds like it. So we're not, it's Lieberman's not really a shoo-in. And then what about, what do you think all this business with Al Gore, huh?
Al Gore, you know, if you think of what happened to him, which was, you know, if I was Al Gore, I would have just been devastated by what occurred in 2000.
Yeah.
But he was so smart, and he just got completely off the radar for like 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once in a while you hear something from him, but it was certainly nothing that would put him in any position to run against Bush in 2004. But now, you know, with this global warming documentary that he's come out with, and he's been speaking, and he's been traveling a little bit, you know, there's been much more discussion about what it is that he's going to do. And from a strategic standpoint, he's really positioned himself extremely well for this 2008 election, should he decide that he's going to actually run.
Oh, yeah. If he gets in there, I mean, pretty much between him and Hillary, you know, I mean, it's going to be interesting.
It will be very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't... Hillary is such a polarizing figure, which is very unfortunate. You know, she's very capable. She's made a good name for herself in the Senate. But when she goes out on the stump, you know, there's still all those people that hate her for what she proposed with the health plan in like 93 and 94 or whatever it was. And they think that she's too tough or whatever. You know, she's got too many balls for any of the guys in the country.
Well, if she is going to be the first woman president, she's got to be, you know, she's got to be a bitch, you know, to get it, because you have some little wallflower, Florence Henderson type of a person become a first woman president. You got to have nerve and, you know, got to have a set. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
But
it will
still
be very interesting. You know, even Gore now, you know, is getting a lot of negative press from, of course, Fox News. You know, he said that this movie is going to create global warming hysteria on Fox News. And,
oh, I saw that. Somebody, David, what's his name? What's his name? Ass Man? He had that
Ass
on there.
Man.
Yeah, and Ass Man.
What
had
a name, A-S-M-A-N.
Yeah, he had the little on the Chiron at the bottom of the screen. It says, oh, well, Gore's movie trashed the economy or something. Oh, for crying out loud. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, obviously, if you look at the glaciers melting, something's going on. I mean, if it's not global warming, it's, I don't know what else it would be, you know?
Right.
I don't
Absolutely.
Know. And then the NSA and reporters. Yeah, I saw that where Alberto Gonzalez says that there's some kind of a law or something on the books where they can use that to go after reporters for revealing these scams that the Bush administration's pulling. Huh?
Well, you know, this goes to another point that I wanted to bring up about Bush. Has he reached FUBAR?
Mm.
FUBAR, you know, it's like blanked up. Beyond all repair, you know.
He was like that since before the 2004 election. I'm sorry to say that, but
yeah. But in this case, you know, the NSA and the reporters, they can't stop. You know, whatever it is that is against the administration, the NSA is going to go after, and they're wiretapping tens of millions of Americans. They're wiretap reporters. They're going to investigate reporters. They're going to indict reporters. They'll indict, you know, Americans who are against the election, saying that they're going to try to revolt against the country. I mean, at this point, honestly, if you look at what they've been doing, where is the line?
Yeah, I mean, it's
where will they not cross?
Exactly.
And people have this fear, and this goes into another point that I wanted to bring up, and I'll talk about it in a little bit more detail, but you know, there is no line that this administration will not cross to fulfill their political goals, and they think that they can ignore whatever law they want.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the president has said that.
Oh yeah,
when
he's above the law.
Passed a law, he says, I'm not going to pay attention to this.
Oh, because
where is the restraint? Where are the checks and balances?
Exactly.
They do not exist.
Exactly. That's why we need the press to be that check on the administration, and because the Congress won't do it because they're in bed with Bush, you know. And then you have to have the press has got to be that power that watches what's going on, you know.
Yep.
You know, because Congress is supposed to be the check on the executive branch, and they're not doing it. So the press has got, the Fourth Estate has got to be the one that's doing the job of Congress. That's what they're doing.
Absolutely.
You know, and what else? Bush and immigration and Senator Byrd. Yeah, Senator Byrd let him have it about asking for money, and then Byrd is saying he's been asking for money for like 8 years or something there,
yeah,
6 years.
And Bush has been saying, no, it's excessive. Yeah. It's like unnecessary. And all of a sudden this year, you know, it becomes like this big issue, and I wonder why. I mean, it was a big issue in 2000. Mm-hmm. It was a big issue in 95 and 90. You know, these people have been streaming over the border for years, mm-hmm. and the various administrations, for all sorts of reasons, have decided to ignore this border problem.
Well, because this is election year. Bush sees this as pretty much the only way to save the GOP Congress.
Absolutely.
Well, and what about this thing in 86 that Reagan signed? Reagan gave him an amnesty before, you know?
Yep.
And they're not screaming about him. I don't know if you saw that mealy-mouthed Lindsey Graham on the Meet the Press, and here he is, oh, they're going to give amnesty like the way Carter did to all those, you know, cowards from that fled to Canada after Vietnam. Well, hello, he forgot about Reagan gave all the illegals amnesty, you know?
Right.
You know,
well, we definitely have a problem in this country in that, you know, we have so many laws that are absurd that people don't pay attention to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be drug laws or it can be speed limits. I mean, you think of yourself, here you are, you're driving through a neighborhood and, you know, you can walk faster than 25 miles an hour and there's a 25 mile an hour speed limit sign up.
Yeah.
And who pays attention to that? Mm-hmm. And you say, well, even the police don't pay attention to it. They say, we won't give you a ticket until you go over 15 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that kind of thinking goes into play in many, many laws. And when you think about, you know, this immigration, they ignore it. People come across the border. And then there are Republicans that say all these illegals ought to be thrown out. Mm. But what about all the businesses that have been enticing all these illegal immigrants to come across the border and work?
Exactly.
Are they not as guilty? You know, and yet they, you know, even after the fact, the government knows who those businesses are, but they won't go and find them or throw the owners in jail. They want to, like, make felons out of all the illegal immigrants.
Yeah, because you want
which is absurd.
Yeah, because
if you're going to have a law, enforce it.
Yeah,
or change it.
Exactly. We got laws in the books right now that they're not following. And then, you know, the Social Security Administration, they know when they see this money coming in from these, you know, five or six people sending in for the same Social Security number, they know there's illegals using these same Social Security numbers. They just turn
I bet you could go through three quarters of the states in the country and find laws against oral sex, and we'd all be thrown in.
Uh-oh.
We'd all be thrown in.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, all this. What about politics and horse racing? Oh, that poor horse there. What's name?
This is a Triple Crown season, and I was thinking about this, and I found it really interesting. And the reason is that I started thinking. You know, I have this political sports site, and I think about the relationship of sports and politics. And something really struck me about this, and I think of a racehorse, like especially a champion racehorse that's racing in the Triple Crown. And, and I thought about, what if you sort of visualize and just, you know, extend the metaphor and say that the horse is our country. And we look at what it is about a jockey that pertains to our government. So think about the government as this jockey.
Yeah.
In the one hand, Republicans think that the jockey, according to the Democrats, is some like 7'2", 350-pound shack that is going to be sitting on top of this horse, trying to control every step of what this horse is going to do. And of course, the horse is going to be completely overburdened and can't do anything, can't run, can't do whatever it wants. You know, And it's going to break down and fall apart. On the flip side, you know, Democrats often think of Republicans as wanting, like, some kind of mechanical 3-pound jockey that's nothing more than laser weapons and nuclear missiles. You know? And, of course, the horse has no idea where it's going to go, how fast it's going to run, no controls over what's going on. It could stop, it could graze, it could do whatever it wants, but it never gets to the finish line.
Mm.
You know, so we're in this sort of conundrum of how or what is it that we really need? And obviously, in order for this great racehorse, which I really look at the United States in a very positive way, you know, of being really still very young and vital and, you know, explosive and being able to adapt and change and go forward, needing a jockey that is light and strong and wiry and can feel what this horse needs and make it go the way it wants to, but still be able to direct it toward its goal, which is the finish line ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. It needs to whip it when it needs it. It needs to hold back. It needs to urge it, you know, and do all the things necessary for the jockey to get the horse to run its race.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in so many ways, we polarize these things in these extremes, from the 350-pound, 7-foot-2-inch shack to, you know, the Republicans who think that there are no controls necessary, which is absolutely ridiculous. Well, we really need a middle ground, you know, where somebody who's very knowledgeable, that understands the horse, the country, and understands where it's going, specifically this particular track and the finish line and the weather, and you could take that and extend it into, like, energy policy, you know, education policy, you know, how we're adapting to the future, how we're adapting to our poor people and the unbelievable numbers of people that are in prisons. And there were a couple of good articles about that this week.
Like, 2.2 million.
Yeah, one out of 136 people in this country are in prison.
Uh-huh.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So obviously there are things that are wrong that need to be addressed. And in this sense, you need a jockey, but not so much of one that it's going to really restrict the energy and the power of this horse. And, you know, the analogy and the metaphor made so much sense to me, and how fragile things are, you know, when, especially like this week when you saw this great racehorse break down.
Yeah, it
Barbara,
was terrible.
You know, which was just a really sad thing. But it brought the analogy home even more.
Mm.
And I was thinking, you know, there are ways that we can look at how our society works in terms of sports and really learn some valuable lessons and try to implement some changes that work in context of, you know, the extreme left, the extreme right, and trying to find that balance so we can move forward and really make our country thrive.
Absolutely.
The way that we all want it to.
Yeah.
You know, because no Democrat wants, I don't like taxes, and I can honestly say, you know, I'm a left-leaning guy, but I don't want anybody taking any money out of my pocket.
True.
And why does a Republican always say, oh, Democrats just want taxes?
True.
Are you crazy?
Well, speaking
I don't want anybody taking my money.
Yeah. Well, speaking of crazy trip, Chip, we have to let you go at the end of the segment with you.
Hey, Sean, thank you very much.
Welcome. I'll speak to you in a few weeks. You're going away for a while, right?
I am.
All right,
I am.
So have a safe.
I'm going to head to Europe for a couple of weeks, and maybe when I come back, I'll have some interesting things to say.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, have a great night, Sean.
You too. Thank you. Bye. And that was Chip from PicklesSports.com with our political report. And we'll be back in just a couple minutes with the second hour with Rob Thurman of PopCultureJunkies.com. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
originating from Las Vegas, Nevada, you're listening to LV Rocks. Noise from Vegas.
And welcome back to the second hour of Subject to Discussion Live on LVRocks.com, as well as part of the podcast on LVRocks.com. Thank you for everybody listening live and, of course, listening to the podcast and everybody in the chat room. And the program is part of the AntiRadio.net podcast, as well as Meeker Broadcasting. Thank you. And actually, that attention sound effect, I meant to mention that. I was watching a commercial for Henderson Hyundai here on local TV, and that damn sound effects are tough. That's a damn one. I'm like, oh, man, now I get to sue somebody. I get to sue somebody for sound effect. They're the Centurions. And that's the Centurion in charge of production, Consoler. And with that, we'll be joined with our pop culture segment, Rob Thurman of Pop Culture Junkies. Rob Thurman, are you there, sir?
I certainly am.
There you go.
Good evening.
We think of that music introduction there. That's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
I like that Cylon's sound effect, too.
Well, the Cylon, yes. They say the local Honda, there's the Cylon. The local Honda dealer has stolen my sound effect for the commercial they're running out here, so I have to sue them. Of course, I'm not using it without permission either.
Yeah, but then wouldn't Richard Hatch, or isn't he the one who owns all that Battlestar Galactica stuff anyway? Then he would sue you,
no.
And then it would just be this nasty feud.
Oh, well, I'm already in a kind of a feud with sci-fi already, but what the hell's the difference?
Well, everybody's fighting in Hollywood these days.
They don't like me. I don't know. The producers of Battlestar, I don't think they like me very much because the contributor I have on come on after you. You know, we tended to give away spoilers, and they didn't like it, and, it's like, what the hell? You know what I mean? But oh well. Anyway,
well, that's just the failure of the studio system overall. You know, they used to be able to exact such exacting control over everyone's lives, and they can't do that anymore. So,
I'm
not crying for them.
No, I mean, well, the spoilers. I mean, I can see. You know, their point is that the creativity gets hurt when a show doesn't come back until October. How we're revealing things are happening already, and then they're just filming the shows now. You know, I could see that, but I mean. Anyway, you want to go on and hash that out. But anyway, Rob Thurman, you're one of the poobahs over there at Pop Culture Junkies, aren't you?
Yes, I'm the editor.
The editor, congratulations. Now, give everybody a little background about Pop Culture Junkies.
Well, we've been blogging for about 3 years now, and the site is comprised entirely, for the most part, of volunteers who mm-hmm. just sort of have an unhealthy obsession with popular culture.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can only speak for myself in that, my world has sort of been viewed and shaped by, by being raised on television in the 1980s. So there is sort of, some sort of an odd sort of glisten to the world that can only, come from, having been raised by watching the Facts of Life and Heart to Heart.
There you go.
Everybody means well, but there's always some dastardly crime to be sort of.
Well, yeah, because you take the good and you take the bad and mix them both, and there you have, the Facts
it's murder,
of Life.
Yeah.
I'm going for the Facts of Life one. when they got together, it was murder, right? Mr.
Yes.
and Mrs. H. But anyway, yes. I'm on the site now. I like it because I tell everybody it's the easiest one I found about pop culture to get around it because it's very easy. You have to jump through hoops to get from one page to the other. So it's very well put together.
Thank you.
Basically, just page down, and if you want to read more, some of the hyperlinks. You click on that, it takes you into a little in depth about the story. And then I like the picture that's on there right now about Magneto. Oh, there you go, the X-Men picture that's on the site right now.
Yeah,
very cool.
It's sort of an odd thing how the whole thing sort of works for us. I mean, as our site's starting to get more popular, where we start to get. I guess press releases and things along the nature of the, I guess, mainstream media gets. And, today we got, a press release from the folks who handle publicity for Meatloaf.
Oh.
Really? Which is, you know, very odd and sort of random, but, yeah. You know, given that I'm me, you know, when I hear of meatloaf, I immediately think of Martha Stewart. Yeah. So somehow it's, you know, tying in, you know, a press release about, you know, MP3s from Meatloaf, Martha Stewart, you know, her mother, and the upcoming X-Men movie, which opens this Friday. You know, it's just, they're all sort of strangely interconnected and overlapped in a way.
Yeah, well, this is supposedly the last of the X-Men movie. I was just telling the producer, Khan, that I read somewhere where the Avengers movies are going to be coming next. Yeah, we're done with the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. I guess, I don't know if they're making a sequel, but next supposedly is going to be Avengers.
That piece of tripe that came out with, that was horrible.
I didn't see it.
It was a waste.
Really?
A complete... Yeah. An utter waste of time.
Wow. And what else is going on? You also have how many cows is Kim Clinton? Now, where are you at? You're in Chicago?
I'm in St. Louis.
Oh, St. Louis. Okay.
Yeah, but we have contributors from around the country. Our publisher's in Chicago, and we have folks, you know, from various parts of these fine, fine United States.
Really? Actually, a question from the chat room. Who won the American Idol? Do we know?
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch that show.
Oh, I don't know. We have a few...
I have to admit, TV's not my specialty.
Really?
That stuff gets on my nerves.
Really? Well,
especially that show. I take it from a very political point of view. Mm. My pop culture politics are all kind of messed up. When more people will vote for a show for personality on a show like that than vote for president, I say, to hell with it. I'm not watching.
Yeah, it's sad when you see that. I mean, they obsess over this. And I said, one thing I like to see, Bush do a press conference and interrupt American Idol. That would surely get the Republicans out of office now.
Well, yeah, that might actually get some people agitated, although I would imagine a lot of people would ask, well, who's this on TV?
Well, I said at work, people still think, when I used to work in the local pro wrestling business here in Vegas, a lot of people still thought that Clinton was the president. You know?
Oh, sure.
But and what about you want to talk about the stars at war, huh?
Yeah.
Really? Who's at war?
Oh, well, there's been a lot of bitter sort of, you know, contentious publicity battles between a number of folks in Hollywood from Paris Hilton's, you know, buddies. Saying just outrageous and scandalous things about other sort of starlets, and on top of the regular wrangling for publicity and attention, it seems that we're sort of amping up for a summer of a lot of vicious, hateful starlets with folks stealing other people's husbands and men, and you know all of that sort of good stuff. That's sort of classic Hollywood. So.
Yeah.
We're just sort of on the lookout right now to see, you know, who's going to be engaged in the next sort of like battle for headlines.
Well, they have now that Brad Pitt is skipping Cannes to be with what's her name, Angelina Jolie, in the deserts of Africa for the pending birth of their child, right?
Right. Well, like that's news that a man, you know, is deciding to be an engaged and involved father. You know, woo.
Yeah, that's like a shocking thing. Well,
you know, when Brad Pitt and you know, Miss Aniston split up, I mean, it trumped coverage of the tsunami. So it's an odd sort of spectacle, this whole show. Although I am firmly in Angelina Jolie's court. I mean, I'm gay as a goose, but I love that woman. And you know, she's got some fire in her soul. You know, she's spirited.
Really?
She's a hell of a lot more interesting than that Jennifer haircut. So I'm all for her getting Brad Pitt.
You're terrible. I felt sorry for Jennifer Aniston. He throws her over for Angelina Jolie, the daughter of, what the hell's his name, that guy, the actor.
Oh, Victor Kiriakis. Yeah, that's exactly why Jennifer Aniston should have been able to have engaged in some, like, soap opera theatrics and gotten her man back. She clearly has never watched an episode of her father's show, because as a child of Victor Kiriakis, I mean, I'm an old school Days fan here. They bury people alive. They take massive reconstructive plastic surgery efforts to, you know, vindicate themselves and their family. She has about 1,000 plot lines that she could have sought vengeance on Angelina Jolie, and all she does is get on Oprah and cries a little.
Well,
I don't feel sorry for her one damn bit.
Really? Wow.
No.
I do. I just, you know, I mean, she'll never be the box office smash that Jolie is. You know, she's going to end up going back to television at some point in the next few years. So, I mean, you know, she'll probably be in the rehashed Golden Girls or something, you know?
She'll be lucky if she gets into rehab. That might make people like her again. But I've always sort of long suspected that the American public really doesn't like her.
Really?
Because of that whole battle that she had with her mother.
Oh, yeah, her mother's famous too. Wait a minute now. Aniston's mother or Jolie?
Yeah, Aniston's mother, and she got into this big old argument.
Yeah.
And so for years, Jennifer Aniston wouldn't talk to her mother.
No.
And I've always suspected that there have been a lot of American women in particular who don't think that it's right that you make $33 million a year, that you sleep with Brad Pitt, and that your mother doesn't hassle you. So I think that once the tide turned on this relationship, they were laughing.
Really? And then, well, Jolie, she's got a famous father.
Right, John Voight.
John Voight, yeah. He's the one that was in Lonesome Dove and all that. And
then
what else?
But he's just creepy.
Yeah, he is. He last movie I saw him in, he was okay in the Nicolas Cage movie with the Constitution. What was that? National Treasure. He was pretty good in that. Limited role. His face doesn't be on camera very long because it looks like he's had some work done, but it's like a bad plastic surgery, you know?
Well, they've all had work done now, which is a sort of, it's this increasing sort of national sort of trend, which in and of itself I think just it's flat out strange.
Now, who else is feuding in Hollywood? I'm going trying to pick up any feuding. You got Nicole Richie and Paris Hilton and all
right.
that.
Well, then apparently the Simpson sisters are fighting over allegations of a nose job or not a nose job.
Uh-oh, really? So
that that's such a staggering, horrifying American story, families torn apart over rhinoplasty, but that's contemporary American life,
Now, are you big on movies? Now, Da Vinci Code did really well in the box office, apparently. So much is that they're going to come up with another movie, like a prequel to that. I read somewhere they're going to make a movie out of
their plans are underway for number 2 and number 3.
Wow. Huh. Now, 2 and 3, Jesus. I mean, how well did that movie do? It did really well. How much did it make?
They're just playing. The thing is, though, they've gotten so much press out of this that, they'll at least be able to do 2, if not 3, from the DVD rental alone.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to go see a movie. It's going to be a movie. I don't know. I like the sci-fi movies. I liked the Siriana. That was very good. I don't know. Have you seen the movie yet?
No, well, I've done quite a bit of research on the whole issue around the central theme of the movie, and the thing that I find really fascinating that's not been discussed a whole lot in context of this story is the Gospel of Judas that came out, that was produced, the whole story that was produced and authenticated by the National Geographic Society, where they actually found some ancient texts which tend to sort of reshape the overall viewpoint of the life of Christ. And, it's valid, apparently. It's historical. There's a lot of context there that it can sort of make you think about what your assumed relationship it might be about between Judas, and his betrayer. And, it just sort of got glossed over a little bit. I think that's sort of unfortunate. But, Tom Hanks is always out there shepherding causes one way or the other. Mm. I mean, he finally got some of the World War II veterans the recognition they deserved back in the day. So who knows? Maybe, maybe in number 2 or number 3, Mary Magdalene, will turn out to be, I don't know, daughter of the American Revolution, her grandchildren or something along those lines.
And then Prince Caspian has been delayed till 2008, the sequel to Chronicles of Narnia. Wow. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what's going on with that one, because now they pushed that back. It must be some kind of problem with the production, huh?
Who knows with that? I mean, they stage these things very specifically these days. I mean, there's specific moves afoot to put films out so that that they can create more buzz, or that they have a greater chance of getting Oscars. I read that about the Augustine Burroughs film, Running with Scissors, that they've moved it back a little bit so that it gets greater buzz around Oscar time, nomination time. So all of that's calculated.
Yeah. And then what's going on in Cannes now? I'm reading a story about a movie that Brad Pitt and Blanchett are in, a movie called Babel. That sounds like it's going to be interesting. They start a powerful new film, an examination of linguistic, cultural, and personal barriers that sweep across 3 continents and tackles terrorism, immigration, and suicide. Wow, that's like a multi-pronged movie there. Huh?
There's a lot going on at Cannes right now, and the new film by John Cameron Mitchell, the guy that put out Hedwig and the Angry Inch, it's called Short Bus, and it's getting a lot of attention because if it comes to the States at all, it's going to get an NC-17 rating.
Uh-oh.
And I mean, its goal is to completely sort of demystify, you know, to demystify sex for an American audience, if that can actually happen.
Huh? And what else is big in Cannes?
Well, of course, you know, they're trotting out the regular things. Like, you know, they premiered the X-Men there, you know. So Halle Berry, you know, was out prancing around, and Ian McClellan was doing his thing, too. You know, every day it's just a corporate sort of sponsored spectacle there. So the thing when trying to sort of glean through the press about these shows is what actually has specific buzz and what people are just paying for, you know.
Yeah.
Partly what'll happen is that, you know, the wheat will be separated from the chaff when the awards come out, and the spectacle sort of dies down.
Yeah. What about the Al Gore movie that screened over there, The Inconvenient Truth? Now, it sounds like that's going to be a blockbuster. I hate to say it. It's just going to be one of these movies that's going to come out of nowhere, huh?
Well, I think that very well can happen. I mean, there's been a lot of commercial success for some of those sort of on-the-edge, you know, documentaries. And I think that, especially given the political climate that the country's in right now, where there are just a lot of pissed-off people searching for meaning and answers, that a film like that, if it's well done, you know, and get some good word of mouth, people will go see.
Yeah. Now, we think what that will do, if that movie turns out to be a blockbuster, like it's sounding, do you think that's what will propel Gore to rethink his refusal to run for president and run? Or do you think he's really done? He said he's done. He's done.
I think, you know what, I think he might just have to check himself at the door and realize that, you know, he can do a lot of good doing what he's doing now. I mean, it's kind of like our old pal Bubba Clinton, you know.
Yeah.
Now that, you know, he's been able to, I mean, he pretty much by himself got a lot of the soft drinks pulled out of America's, you know, public schools.
Absolutely.
You know, from the just sheer, his sheer presence in getting involved in an issue, he's been able to probably create some effective change and difference because he's not necessarily as tied to the politics of the moment.
Well,
and, you know, if Gore could probably, you know, if he's just sort of checked his ego and he says, hey, listen, I can still get a lot of attention and I don't have to go through all this political BS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah, I don't know. I still have a feeling that deep down he likes the name, you know, President Al Gore. You know what I mean?
Well, I just don't think that, you know, there's some of that ego thing too. Where,
yeah.
I mean, is Hillary going to be the one that's going to be running? That's got to be strange when your former boss's wife can get the job that you can't.
Yeah, I was a huge supporter of hers until I started looking more and more at how divisive that she is. I'm leaning more and more towards John Edwards because, you know, he's already been through the mill. You know what I mean? And he'll have some sympathy on his side because of his wife's breast cancer fight.
Right.
You know, so I think he'd be more of an anti-Hillary, who stands more chance of breaking through to the south of the GOP and all that. So.
Well, I think he's probably a better candidate than anybody at this particular moment. But we've got to sort of look at what's going on, you know, this. We got to get through this fall first because I have this feeling it's going to get real ugly soon.
Oh, yeah, it already is. It will get even uglier. Now, what about the, I talked earlier about these, about the Omen movie. They put in a scene from 9/11 in the opening scenes of the movie, and people are up in arms because they don't think they should be seeing the smoking buildings in a movie. Now, what do you think about that?
You know, that whole... That whole enterprise has always just sort of, you know, fascinated me because we've already produced three of those movies came out in the 70s and 80s, right?
Yeah.
And it was the end of times all over again. And, you know, profiteering from September 11th, I mean, it certainly hasn't stopped Nicolas Cage or Oliver Stone. I mean, it certainly hasn't stopped a lot of people in that matter. And, you know, whether or not it's so-called, you know, it was Satan's claim, you know, I think it's all really problematic, and I think the trouble with making a big issue out of it is that it's really just a campy, goofy horror movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's about some evil little child, and I think we've all encountered some evil little children in our past, and so, you know, it's just a little bit of a scare tactic, and I don't know. I'm not necessarily one of those persons who's a big fan for this sort of constant regurgitation of pop culture. You know, like Hairspray the movie became Hairspray the musical became Hairspray the movie.
Yeah, it's we have Hairspray here in Vegas over at the Luxor Hotel. I mean, that show does gangbusters. I don't care what they say. I mean, it's amazing though. I mean, just we've been beating over the head with this movie for years.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, and then the Cirque du Soleil folks now they're doing Beatles shows and you know they're bringing Elvis back from the dead. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we've got these pop culture zombies amidst us all the time now. It's like they if you achieve a certain level of success and notoriety, you just never die. You just come back, in a Cirque du Soleil show.
Yeah, and then also you want to talk about YouTube. Yeah, YouTube, you got a lot of YouTube on your site, Pop Culture Junkies, as well. Now, that's explain it for people who don't know about YouTube.
YouTube is essentially a website that allows you to upload video. Mm. And easily sort of embedded video player that bloggers like myself can put on our website, and with basically one click of the button, you can watch a video on any type of computer, basically at almost any type of connection speed. A DSL connection helps, of course, but it's a video sharing program that literally has something like 35,000 files being uploaded to it, I think, an hour. It's out of control. It's made the ability to watch commercials or hard to find films or people just sitting in their house, doing karaoke, readily and easily available. And it is, in my estimation, just helping turn the internet into just a constant sort of television station.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, did you see this like CNN and MSNBC using this for their newscasts? I think that'd be ideal if they did that.
Oh, sure they can, but the some of that's proprietary, and you can easily download some of this material, and and at this moment, AOL has launched a feature like that. Google's had this around for a while. A lot of the old school internet providers are incorporating this technology because it allows the viewer or allows the internet user to just sort of create these completely customizable, online video interactive experiences. You don't have to sit through commercials, or if you're just interested in watching a bunch of episodes of Facts of Life or select moments of Facts of Life, you can just type that into the YouTube search engine, and 68 videos pop up, and you can just sit there and watch them for free, and you don't have to deal with the whole sort of commercial advertising or any of that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing. Now all this YouTube on your site, with the bandwidth and anything, does it weigh it down the website, or it doesn't seem like it still loads
with
pretty fast?
The YouTube?
Yeah.
No, the YouTube, it's not actually even hosted on our site. It's hosted it's hosted at YouTube's Big Brain, wherever that is.
Wow, it's amazing.
And so people can just watch the content through our site, but it doesn't affect us at all.
Huh. Now, what about a question from the chat room about Madonna and her tour in L.A.? Huh? What's going on with that?
I'm so pissed at her. There's a picket line. She crossed the picket line to do that show. So the forum out there where the concert is being held is owned by a fundamentalist church.
No.
And is managed by a management company that's partly owned by Paris Hilton's family, and they've locked out the people that sell concessions, the janitors, the stage hands that have worked there for decades. Mm. So they're outside the forum protesting, and she can get up on her sparkle cross, and she can wear her crown of thorns, and she can gyrate up and down talking about how she's bucking the establishment. But if that bitch crosses a picket line, I'm sorry, she has no credibility as far as I'm concerned. She's just a tawdry Pop-Tart as far as I'm concerned, and she's just making money, and that's all it's about. And if people want to buy into that spectacle that she's been doing for 25 years now, all right, but she doesn't need to call herself controversial. She's just a packaged product.
Yeah, because I'm looking at I'm on your site now, and the pictures are amazing. And rumors are, she's gonna be here in Vegas, and I don't know when, at the MGM. But rumors are that she's gonna be contracted to replace Celine Dion at Caesars when Celine Dion's contract is up. So who knows? Because supposedly it's gonna.
She is, hardcore, material girl. I mean, it's all about her and her money. Mm. And I can applaud that to a certain extent, but when you start mixing in these issues of social justice and being right and being wrong, and you know, the folks that manage her tour are associated with Clear Channel, who are major supporters of the Republican Party. And when you get up on stage and you badmouth the president, but the people who are producing your tour, who are taking part of that $350 a ticket, are also Republicans, then you're just talking out about both sides of your mouth.
Yeah.
You know, so if she could get a consistent political stance, stay there and be true to it, you know, I'd support her. But you know, all these years of watching her prance around, and she really hasn't actually changed anything in this world except for her own bank account. I'm not with her anymore.
Yeah, well, I can see if she pulled like a Angelina Jolie and went over, you know, to, you know, bring attention to Darfur and some of the areas in Africa. But really, Madonna hasn't done any of that.
No, know? She's not a particularly generous person.
No.
I mean, unlike Oprah, who she she's got some issues, clearly. She's working out. But you know what? She'll start schools. She'll, you know, she generally is, she's well known for her philanthropic nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there is a certain level of responsibility, of social responsibility that some of these celebrities have if they're going to talk about these social issues, right?
Yeah.
Madonna really doesn't really do that. And so It's just sort of inconsistent. But you know, the fans show up. The people will shell out the money. They'll cross the picket lines to get to see her do something that, you know, it's going to be on HBO in a few months anyway. So it doesn't necessarily make the world of sense to me. I think there are a bunch of independent artists and a bunch of local people who are performing at your local taverns and nightclubs and bars that you could get a real experience for $5, and you know, you should go support instead.
Yeah, and her, and also we have what Prince is coming to town. I think this weekend here in Vegas, he's going to be at some bar. I'm like, what a fall from grace he's had. You know, he's at some Empire Ballroom, which is a nightclub here in town. I mean, what happened to the days when, you know, people like him could command a huge showroom? You know.
Well, the thing is, though, that's exactly why he changed his name.
Yeah.
That's exactly why he quit the system and, you know, became the artist formerly known as. It's that there is this big trade-off that you have when you have that level of success. You don't really get to be yourself anymore. I mean, he became just this product that was packaged and, you know, sent through a marketing department, and his photos were retouched, and his words were groomed and controlled, and he couldn't be fiery, and he couldn't be himself. So I don't necessarily see that as, like, a fall. I see that as he gets to do what he wants to do. He's probably made enough money.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was slightly smart, he invested some of that stuff. So now he can roll up into town, do a gig, get paid a couple of $1,000s or whatever it is he gets paid, and, you know, have his own life and control of his own destiny, which, you know, there's got to be something kind of powerful in that after being on the other side where you don't really control what happens to you at all.
Yeah. Well, Rob, we had to end of our segment with you. We thank you very much for being on.
Well, thank you very much.
We look forward to whoever's on next week.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much. You have a good night.
All right.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. And that was Rob Thurman, the poobah over at popculturejunkies.com. Very, very energetic segment there. Flew by. And in a moment, we'll be joined by Koenig Rules with our Battlestar Galactica Doctor Who review and Battlestar Galactica boilers and everything else. So it'll be interesting to see. But what was it going on in the chat room about Madonna writing books and all that? Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like Oprah. I mean, I know a lot of people are getting sick of Oprah because, you know, she's pretty much, her way or the highway and all this stuff. But, I mean, it might be time for Oprah to take a couple years off and go away and come back. You know, it's like Madonna. She took off for a while and came back. Same thing with Cher. So maybe good time for Oprah to go away for a little while. You know, everybody gets sick of hearing Oprah and Legends Ball and all this stuff and blah blah blah. You know, I mean, you get to a point where you just don't care anymore. You know, she used to be this grounded woman who it was an everyday type of woman, talked about French fries and all that. Now she's got a house in Santa Barbara and all this stuff. So almost to a point where, you know, you don't care about her anymore. So, and also, it was this other thing I was reading. Where are we here? And it gets real, the Iraq War. U.S. Irwin Winkler. Yeah, I saw that. There's a on the Scarborough Country. They're talking about this Baghdad ER, which they're running. It's HBO have filmed it. It's gruesome. I mean, if that doesn't turn people against this war in Iraq, I don't know what will. It's emergency room, these mobile or where they are, emergency rooms that these troops come in with wounds and everything. It's just, it's horrendous. But I mean, the images of these troops, blood all over them, and they show images of people working on their chest, trying to keep them alive and all that. And boy, when that gets out into a more broader review on DVDs or something, I mean, that's going to piss people off about this war even more, you know. As I said, it just is ridiculous. And what else? And then so we talked the Omen and the Amityville Horror. The homeowner who owned that house passed away. So he passed away. And it's that famous house. Who can ever forget that house? And it can never put in their movie or a TV show set in that house ever again, because that house has always been on Amityville. It's like some other shows trying to use the South Fork as a house on some show. And then, no way in hell they can get away with that, because that's the Ewing's house. So, I mean... big deal, but I mean, still, people still see the house as Dallas's house. And same thing with the Desperate Housewives. You know, a lot of those houses are using those fronts of the houses are on the Warner Brothers lot. And those are former houses of old shows. You know, one of the houses, I forget, was the Leave It to Beaver house. And then, there's one house, like I said last week, they won't show on that street because it's the Munsters house. You know, and so that you'll never get away with that. They show that house, everybody knows it's the Munsters. You know, and all the houses on that show are, you know, the Munsters house. Same thing with that one show supposed to use the Brady Bunch house. That got shot down because everybody knows that the house in I believe it's in Pasadena is the Brady Bunch house. So I'm also looking at the Brooks and Dunn win at the Country Music Awards. Wow. That's going on today here in Las Vegas. We're going to film it starting at 5 o'clock out here, excuse me. And Brooks and Dunn, the most honored artist in the history of the Academy of Country Music Awards show, picked up a record 20th trophy Tuesday night as country music's elite gathered to perform and compete for honors. Wow. So, but anything about who the hell won that damn American Idol? We'll have to find out. Anyway, I think we'll be joined by Mr. Koenig Rules. I think they see the TARDIS in the distance. The TARDIS is the birthday boy, Mr. Koenig Rules.
Hello.
Hello, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. Did Rose give you a proper birthday greeting?
No, I'm in my 20th regeneration.
You're 20th regeneration. Oh. You're going to come out, what, looking like Brad Pitt or what?
No, more like the first doctor.
You look like, what's his name, Jamie Bamber. You'll come out looking like him.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, have you seen, you go on that sci-fi message board, there's so many of these threads. I mean, these women and these guys are just so obsessed with Jamie Bamber, you know? Yeah.
Oh, with his porking out?
Yeah, well, no, with his looks. And some of them, they had the image as their signature of him dropping the towel and all this.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Holy cow.
With Starbuck and him.
Unbelievable.
Out, sort of like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, the way they talk, I mean, you know, they're having a Bamber moment. I'm like, what are they crazy? You know?
And they're so upset that
he's with D.
Bamber's with D. Mm. He's betrayed Kara, and it's like, oh, geez, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's good that they love the series, but some of them, because I'm like, oh, my God, I get a little creepy. You know?
Well, it reflects the age differences between us, Sean, you know?
Uh-oh. Yeah.
We were that age at one time, so, you know, different ages.
No, no. Some of these are older. Some of these are married. Honest to God, if you read some of those
messages.
You mean
the guy dropping the towel? There's guys out there.
The girls. Some of these women post the message are married and they have kids. And you read it, and I have three kids and two daughters, whatever it is. And it's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess I said all along, he's a candidate for a tanning salon. That's the only thing I see him going into, a tanning salon. You know? So anyway, what do you think of Boomtown? I thought it was outstanding.
Yeah, Boomtown sounds like something that an episode titled Beavis and Butthead.
No, actually, it's the name of a casino we had in Las Vegas. Boomtown. Or sounds like a detective series, Boomtown.
Yeah.
But I thought it was outstanding. They mentioned Bad Wolf again, and they're starting to wonder why Bad Wolf keeps coming up.
You'll see.
Yeah.
And the two-part finale.
That's coming out. Now, they won't be on
Doctor Who. Right. It won't be on this week, so yeah. I don't know what you're going to do next week.
Uh-oh. I have to spoil everything with Galactica, huh? I don't know. And then we hit the ratings from the Doctor dances. They slipped again. It says a telecast, a slightly improved household rating this week of 1.09. I don't know. It was like it's a slip from the week before. I don't know how they can say it went up, but maybe the numbers they had originally gave me were wrong. With an average of 1.4 million viewers, up nearly a quarter of a million viewers from the previous week's season low.
Well, I guess they wanted to see the Doctor dancing.
I guess. Season to date, Sci-Fi reports that Doctor Who is currently averaging a 1.3 household rating and an average audience of 1.5 million viewers for the season, which I think is outstanding because they're in the middle of reruns. So,
that's right.
Yeah,
that's
and then... Right. They open up that show with that woman again, Slitheen, right? She shows up again. And I thought the whole episode was, especially with her and a doctor on that date where she was talking.
Excuse me, do you mind not farting while I'm saving the world?
Uh-oh, there he is. There's the doctor.
Excuse me, do you mind not farting while I'm saving the world?
Uh-oh, yeah, don't fart while you're trying to save the world. And again, I saw how she was going to kill that woman. Reporter. Second thoughts.
A change of heart, right?
Yeah, because she said she was going to get married and she's expecting, and then she had a second thought. But the whole thing with the doctor and her at dinner together, when she tried to kill him with the poison dart and he caught it and all that. And
Doctor Who's really become a soap, hasn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like episodes are linked from previous episodes, so. Yeah.
Excuse me, do you mind not farting from saving the world?
Yeah, and then when they started the episodes, they said previously on Doctor Who, so they did link them together. So that was pretty good. And then what else?
We see the inside of the TARDIS.
What'd you think about that? The heart of the TARDIS.
The heart of the TARDIS. Well, it comes back in the finale too.
Uh-oh, what does it do? The TARDIS
is a life form.
So the TARDIS comes, the heart comes to life at the end of the movie, end of the series too.
Well, let's just say there's communion with one of the characters.
Uh-oh.
Ooh.
Communion.
Communion.
Does it take
blood
of Christ?
I don't mean the Catholic.
That's what I was going to say. So really, I thought it was amazing because, she's standing, she's about ready, she wants to kill Rose and all that, and all of a sudden the thing opens up, and he goes, open up the heart of the TARDIS, look into it, and then
it turns into an egg.
So the heart of the TARDIS regenerates people then, right?
Well, it's filled with everlasting goodness and kindness then.
Wow. Now, has that ever happened before? You're an expert on this, Doctor Who.
Well, they had in the 1996 Fox TV movie where they had a singularity, a black hole type of singularity that was contained within the TARDIS. And in the older series, they always talked about the TARDIS being telepathic and the Doctor being in communion with it, but they never really focused on a life force exactly in the Council itself. So that's something new.
Really? And Invincor is wishing you a happy birthday, excuse me. And he's saying Invincor. Yeah,
thanks.
He's also saying that the first week of June they released the classic series titles Genesis of the Daleks, Dalek, and the Revelation of the Daleks, and then also the first week of July is the Eccleston season box set.
Oh yeah, I got that on pre-order from Amazon.
Yeah, they say Time Lord's going to regenerate 12 times. So he's
they're going to change that a little bit because if he's in his ninth regeneration, and then Tennant is going to be 10. You know, they only have two more.
Yeah, and he says.
So if this show really kicks off and there's other actors, they'll probably change that number.
Really? Yeah, he says the heart of the TARDIS is connected to the time vortex. It can either age or regress things when exposed. Ah,
ooh.
So that's interesting. So, so you said at the end of the season it's going to commune with somebody from the cast, right?
Right. One of the primary characters.
Ooh.
Yep.
Well, there's only two of the primary characters.
I know.
The Doctor and Rose.
but I can't release a Uller, can I?
Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic.
You were fantastic. There you
go. You were fantastic. Okay, let's start having drinks. No.
We got to get that drinking game. Well, I mean, are you drinking? Now, what else happens in the episode? I lost my place. Oh, and Ricky shows up with the passport, right?
Yep, Ricky.
And then he meets Jack, and they want to
see
doesn't like him, and then there's supposed to be the rift in time or something underneath London,
right? Remember that Cardiff. Was tied in with the episode with Dickens.
Yeah.
Was it the second episode or third? It was second or third. Yeah, and so again, like I said, it's a perfect soap. I mean, they're tying in other episodes now together.
Yeah, and then I like the thing where they're chasing that woman around, and she tries to transport away, and he clicks, and she comes back.
That's right.
Yeah, and she goes, I can't keep doing this. Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. And then what else happened? Oh, the Daleks are back. the Daleks are returning, right?
Yes, they are. Next episode for 2 weeks.
Really? So, yep. They said, well, then they capture her, and she goes, taking her back to her planet. I'm not even going to. Raxa Coracofala Portorius. Is that it?
Sounds close enough to me.
Raxa Coracofala Portorius. There you go.
I hope no one is tuning in right at this point.
What the heck is going on here?
And
she's under a death sentence. And then, and anyway, then the TARDIS is refueling from the temporal energy excised by the Gelth and the Unquiet Dead. That's what it was, the Unquiet Dead.
Right.
And what else is happening?
That was episode 3.
Yeah, and then.
Exterminate! Annihilate! Destroy!
Wow. And then Mickey briefly tells her that he's dating again and all this stuff. And he wants to spend a night with her in a motel, right?
But I guess that never happens.
No.
Right?
And then now is she thinking he's dead at the end of this? Whoa. Is she thinking he's dead at the end of the episode, or just that he left her?
Because she
goes back to the restaurant, wherever it is, and he's not there, and she comes back in tears. So
I'm thinking she feels he's left her.
Really? And
even though he's waiting there, you know, and it was a tear jerky moment, you know.
Yeah. I just thought the whole episode, the whole series, you know, I just enjoy it. I mean,
I told you, didn't I tell you that it was, now I did say it was better than Battlestar, but you might disagree with me.
I don't know. I'm kind of in the middle here.
You know,
you've seen
how many hour episodes of Battlestar? 33?
Yeah, it's...
And you're only at number, what is it, 11?
11.
Of Doctor Who. So,
one-third
of Battlestar you've seen with Doctor Who, and...
Yeah,
it's not fair to ask that question.
Well, especially now with the new Doctor. You know, at least with Battlestar, they kept the whole cast together. Now, this is going to be different with the new Doctor. So, hopefully, you say he's good, so we'll see. But, I mean, that tends to change.
He's very good. He's closer in age to Rose, which I think can really add certain things. You know, he's got more hair.
Yeah, a little more sexual sparks between the two of them.
But yeah, I mean, that I think they're going to keep on playing around with. You
yeah, I just like the way it just the whole series just, you know, now that they're relating things that happened in previous episodes, I thought that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, you know, with Galactica, you know, it's a serious, you know, show with the premise and everything. You know, it's serious. At least with Doctor Who, they have a little fun during the series. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I like how the doctor refers to the TARDIS as the most powerful ship in the universe, or somebody that I'm like, wow, that takes a shot at Battlestar, takes a shot at.
Wouldn't it be cool if the TARDIS ended up in the Battlestar Galactica?
That'd be something, huh?
Yeah, it would.
If they show up on Bad Wolf, as June 2nd is called. Yeah. And then Vincent says someone's found the Doctor Who sound archive. I see. What sound archive? The Daleks are already here.
That's right. They've invaded.
And I just, you know, it's incredible. I mean, the way they've done it and everything, it's just, and the stories.
I really like it.
Oh, I really like it. It's just, you know, I like Galactica too. I mean, just this one is different. You know, it's a smaller cast,
right.
And each episode is different, and yet it's the same. You know, especially when they did the you know, going back in time to the 1940s. They did the last two, you know, last week and the two last the last two parter, and they had the especially the attention to detail, the yellow hue they put on when they did the 1940s scenes and all that, and the detail with Hitler and all that, and the and the blimp and all that. I just thought it was incredible. I mean, good for BBC, good for. Britain, they get a high quality show, you know.
Well, it's their version of Star Trek. You know, we're known in the States for Star Trek, and they're known, you know, in that country.
Maybe
for
the TARDIS, maybe the TARDIS will show up on the Enterprise or something with Tom Hanks.
I'd rather show up on Battlestar.
Oh yeah, can you imagine the outrage of from both sides, both fans, if that TARDIS winds up over in the Galactica? Oh my God. I could just imagine.
Let's do a crossover.
They'd pull Ron Moore out of Vancouver, and they'd lynch him alive, I think, if they did that, wouldn't they? Yeah, TARDIS is older than the Battlestar Galactica or the Enterprise, right?
Oh, yes.
So now, any boilers?
Let's see. Well, David Icke did say that a major character was going to die off in season 3.
Uh-oh. Really? Uh-oh.
No, David Icke said that.
David Icke. That's not a,
David Icke
that's
said
not
that,
a boiler.
Not KR.
That's not a boiler. David Icke said that.
And it's true. It is a major character,
wow.
But it's not the one that has been publicized around on the board. So
ooh.
I can definitely say this. It is not D.
It's not D.
Well,
now, is she considered a major character?
No, and I think Icke is deliberately teasing the audience because they're keeping all their primary characters. So I think this is a ploy on his part just to get people to tune in.
Yeah. And Vincor is saying he wishes that the TARDIS would land on the Lost Island so the Doctor could explain everything.
Maybe, get them all home, huh?
I don't know. It may open up the thing there in Lost and end up being on Cloud 9 and the fleet.
The hatch, maybe, and the hatch leads to the TARDIS.
Oh, there you go. The fleet, or the hatch leads to Cloud 9 and the Colonial Fleet.
And then Cloud 9 gets blown up.
So I don't know. And what else? So he says it's a major character. We don't know if it's a character that it's in the main theme of the show, huh?
Well, all I can say is it's not any of the principal characters. But I know which one dies. Now release it, you know, on RA later on.
Now it would be nice if they, you know, because he said they got to keep up with reality, and it would be nice if they did kill off somebody from the main cast
because
to keep it real.
I think it would really add to the suspense in terms of if one character dies, then who's next? But if they keep all of the primary characters, even for all of the third season, then it's always a question, are they ever going to be killing off a main character? You know what I mean?
They should. I mean, I hate to see somebody die in the series, but if they're going to keep it as real as they said they're going to keep it, then they'll have to kill somebody off, you know?
Right, and it's a really big cast when you think about it, even with all the deaths that they had in season 2.
Oh, yeah.
It's still, I mean, a lot of them were incidental characters. I mean, it's still a big cast.
Yeah, well, it wasn't all the characters they killed off weren't really major, you know.
Right,
they're important characters, but they weren't major, you know.
And now what they've done is they've added some guest stars like Lucy Lawless and Dean Stockwell, and they're Cylons, so they can never be killed off.
Yeah.
So they've really added to the complexity of the cast by having these folks on. And you realize if they're Cylons, they can never die.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of some people in the chat room are sending me some messages, but they're pissed that if they're going to keep the series real, I like to, for the show, you know, to show that they can do this, you know, and kill somebody off from the main cast, you know.
Right.
You know, it's a good series. If they're going to keep it real, that, you know, people are going to die, you know, that's just going to be the guys in the red shirts that, you know, they're going to kill somebody off. You know, they'll have to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but all I can say is it is not one of the principal characters. And there's another boiler.
Uh-oh.
And the boiler is that two of the characters in the show cement their relationship.
Oh.
They go one step further.
Whoa, wait a minute. Two characters are going to cement the relationship? I mean, consummate?
Yep.
Uh-oh. Now, yep. Now, either, well, I mean, is it somebody, is it a couple that's already together or they're not together? Or you can't reveal that?
They're together.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. So it's not going to be like they're going to do something like they did at the end of season two, where it's going to be like Kira and Anders, all of a sudden, oh, they're married, you know.
Really? That's going to be interesting. So, huh.
Yep.
So, could it possibly be Adama and Laura? No. That's all right. I'm just surmising. I'm trying to figure out who it can be. You know, unless it's Ty and Laura, that'd be quite a coupling right there. Holy cow! Especially with the one eye with the Cylon parrot on his shoulder. Fire! Come on! Can I have a cracker? You know
that
what I mean?
that must really screw up his depth perception.
with the one eye and the Cylon parrot on his shoulder. Fire, come
on. Yeah, he has one eye remaining, and it goes back and forth.
Oh, my God. And what, any other boilers?
Those are the major two.
Wow.
And it looks like they have definitely filmed the first three episodes.
Very cool. And then also the webisodes, that's something big, too. They're going to air off the sci-fi.com website webisodes.
That's nice.
Yeah, I suppose that's going to bridge what happens between the season finale and when the show comes back on, because you already said that there's going to be a time gap of, 6 months or something?
4 months.
4 months. So this webisodes is going to be the, Battlestar Galactica, they call it the Resistance.
Yes.
So I think they should have done Resistance, should have been the series on Caprica. That's what I think.
Or maybe what they could have done is they could have titled one episode Resistance is Futile.
Ah.
And have 7 of 9 on it.
Oh, yeah, bring the boar again. Mop the floor with the Cylons,
bring
huh?
7 of 9.
There you go. I like to see her, yeah. But And then
Jamie Bamber can drop his towel.
With 7 of 9.
And Lucy Lawless can be there filming it.
Oh, Lucy Lawless. I don't know. I mean, she's good or anything. I hope these guest stars.
Well, I really would like to see Lucy Lawless with less clothes, you know, this year. I mean, she was Xena after all, and it's sort of like, now she's wearing all these clothes, and it's like, come on, she's a warrior princess.
Maybe
right?
Gabrielle can show up as another Cylon. They can get it on or something like that for real this time instead of hitting it.
I have a question for you. Are you going to have the new Caprica theme song coming up?
I'm looking for it. I'm trying to get a good quality new Caprica theme song.
Okay. or you might want to do the Xena theme.
Oh, the Xena. Well, yeah. But when we get the Caprica new, the series is just going to be called Caprica, right?
Right, just
not
Galactica.
Caprica.
By the way, Galactica 1980 was shown today.
Oh, really? On sci-fi?
They had a marathon.
Oh, you're kidding me!
It was really bad. It was really bad.
Yeah, that show.
I was watching about 15 minutes of it where the Cylons discover Earth, and it's the Earth of 1980, and it's sort of like, oh my God!
Yeah.
It was so bad.
Well, I remember that when they were previewing that on the commercials, and they showed the Cylons attacking L.A., and it turns out it was just a computer-generated thing.
Right, it's a simulation.
Yeah, it's like, oh, man, and they ran
that
on the commercials. ABC ran that to death, and everybody's so, oh, my God, the Cylons are going to attack L.A.
And then did you know that Glenn Larson had a couple of his children play the Galactica and Super Scouts when the kids ended up on the... it was so bad.
Horrible.
It was.
Now, in the DVD, any news on the DVD? I'm getting a question about that for season
DVD
two
of
Battlestar.
The final 10 episodes should be coming out in September or October, but so far, no pre-order yet.
No. Now, how about that thing they had the ad in the Daily Variety and all that with the just saying it's the greatest show ever made and all this stuff, and then they get they punch out the hole, and actually it's a DVD with the Pegasus and the Resurrection Ship 1 and 2 on the DVD. Did you see that?
No.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Haven't.
You have to look for the Daily Variety. I haven't seen it. They're talking about the sci-fi board, and Mrs. Ron Moore came up with that, the wife. And she came up with it. It just says greatest show ever made and all this stuff. And it doesn't say Galactica until you actually put in the damn DVD into your thing. And it says Battlestar Galactica on
cool.
the screen.
That's
so
great.
They're trying to get an Emmy and that. So sci-fi took out these ads in Variety and the Hollywood Reporter.
Very good.
And it's a DVD of those three episodes. So that should be interesting, huh?
That will be.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll get some kind of a acknowledgement, but let's see if I can find it. That'd be pretty cool. They say it's expensive, so I don't know what it is. But, yeah, so supposedly you can punch out the hole, the cover, and pop it into your DVD. Watch, I'll do it, and the thing will shred up. And everything. Uh-oh. Uh-oh, Koenig, we're running out of time. But, yeah, check for your if you
I will.
Daily Variety and Hollywood Reporter. I'll say it's supposed to be a black cover, a bunch of words. Greatest series ever lived. It's better than Cats and all that stuff.
Better than Cats.
Anyway, Koenig, we'll let you go.
Okay.
Happy birthday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right, we'll come up with something to talk about. Maybe we'll do the drinking game.
Oh, that'd be cool. That's fantastic.
Fantastic. All right. Bye-bye. So say we all. Happy birthday.
So say we all.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was Koenig Rules. And we thank everybody for being on the program. Thank you to Chip. Thank you, Rob Thurman. Thank you, Koenig Rules. Thank you, Koenig Consoler. Consoler, the producer of Subject to Discussion. I'm Sean Amack, Sean Daly. Good night. Have a pleasant tomorrow.